coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. There we go. Let's see if we can get a hold of our guest now, folks. Let's see here if we can get our guest back. Having a few problems with the system tonight. Only about 18 problems. So sorry about that, folks. Once again, we will be talking with the amazing Bigfoot Roadshow tonight. We will be talking with them at the end of the show. First segment here, as soon as I can, you know, get any of my communication systems to actively come online, we will have our first guest on, Nathaniel Gillis. And we will be actively talking about alien molters, things like that. Let me see what I can do to get him on over here on another source real quick. Because, you know, once again, can't just be a show. It's always got to be something. Let's see what can happen here.
Is that better?
There he is. Sorry about that, man. We literally had a major crash of our system as we brought you on board.
It's okay, man. It happened.
So, right after we had you on the show last time, you actively went out and did a day-long conference with Billy Carson and Forbidden Knowledge Network. I am loving the stuff that he's doing over there. It was funny because it was right after we had Lindsay Sharman on as well. And both of you guys were part of that conference. But part of your topic of that conference was molters, things like that. So let's go ahead and start getting into that topic and see what we can uncover.
Yeah. So my lecture was on the molters, and for those who aren't, aware of my research, my research is primarily centered around the Ejibai phenomenon throughout history and demonic possession, its origin and the role it plays in modernity. And as I was researching different behavioral patterns, I came across a certain species of demon that it was literally a ghost. These entities were ghosts, and what they were doing is, whenever they would go to battle, they would leave their bodies before they would go into war so that they could survive. And so they would literally, the scholars say, they would dispossess their bodies, possess other bodies to stay alive. And so throughout history, what these entities have done is try to recreate what are called replicas of life. And it would suck itself, if you will. In other words, you know, they're trying to create a new body to stay alive in. And then they'll place their.
Oh, wow.
And so it's literally a self-replicating process. And I believe they're using our species to do that 100%. Those are the molters.
And when you say that they are using our species to do that specifically, what do you mean by that? Just humans? Can they embody animal form? I mean, of course, in demonic literature, at least in stories of demons from the Bible, things like that, of course, demons have been cast into animals, animals have been possessed, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But with these in specific, is it something that they can only survive in a human? Does it seem that way?
According to 16th century literature, when we started having possession cases that turned into pregnancies, these entities said they didn't like to possess animals because it was unlike a human. And so originally these were formerly human beings. And so what they were trying to do is not just possess a human body again, but they wanted a body that looked like their own apparitions. And so a lot of times what we were having is this male and female possession, and that never really worked out. And so these Moulters evolved into not just possessing Deirdre and Edna, right? Because Deirdre and Edna doesn't look like the entities that are possessing them. So there, over time, what we had was entities that had their own apparitional manifestations. And so you would have a ghost of the actual body that they originally inhabited. And so what they were doing is literally they got tired of inhabiting animals, inhabiting statues, and they started to recreate a second body to step into. And it's a way for them to stay alive. But so again, I can't stress it enough. It's not just that they're possessing or they want to possess bodies, but they have apparitions. What they want are bodies that look like their own apparitions. And that's what the self-replication program is about.
Wow. And granted, we have had the conversation. We had the conversation with Lindsay Sharman when she was on. We have had the conversation with Carla Bogni Kidd in the past about intergenerational reincarnation. Even right now, some of the things that my son says as a 4-year-old, like, yeah, I used to be a grandpa. So some of the things that he's brought up where it's like, wow, where'd you hear about that? Just been really, really interesting. And the idea that you bring up the fact that these entities have to embody something that looks like them. It's not like a normal demoniac possession where as long as something is willing, they can take over the host. That is
correct.
Not the case.
Correct. This is their pathology is different in that they did mutate in their possession cases. You know, like I said, like in 2008, the University of Chicago, this is very interesting too. This is really where I started researching this phenomenon. But they sent out archaeologists to Turkey on an exhibition, and they dug up this stele, and it was written on by a guy named Katamua. And Katamua mentions, he said, "My soul is in the stele." And so our scholars started to realize, okay, that even as early as the Iron Age, we have records of these people who were dying and transferring their consciousness out of their body, dispossessing their body and placing it. First, it was in the statues. And so that's why when you get into Second Chronicles, Yahweh, God in the Bible, he talks about those who are impoverished seeketh an artificer of metal, right? He's talking about these Moulters who were trying to put their consciousness in idols. Very interesting. And so then, once again, these entities got tired of just, you know, living in idols. Then they started to possess people. And that's why in Numbers chapter 19 and 11, we have that exorcistic rite where if in fact you are possessed by one of these Moulters, they perform an exorcism to get that entity out of you. And then again, these entities mutated to where now it's not just I'm possessing people or statues. Now I want a body that looks like my ghost. And I want to make another key point. This is a different way of reincarnation. It's actually transmigration.
Yes.
Where it's not that I'm being reborn. It's literally that I'm transferring my consciousness into another body. Right? And so that's really how they stayed alive. And if we look closely enough at the behavioral patterns in the UFO abduction phenomenon, we see that this another aspect of this, you know, they're still creating children and they're still inhabiting these babies. And I'll leave it there because I know it gets deep quick.
it gets deep, it gets thick, and the only way you can put it is it gets diabolic real quick.
Yeah. Correct.
And you know, one thought that you brought up a minute ago was the fact that these are disembodied souls that need somewhere to be. And like you said, in Second Chronicles, it refers to the metal artificer.
Correct.
And the fact that they needed somebody to build something for them to embody. And what this reminds me a lot of is the story from Kabbalah of the golem.
Correct.
and the idea that because of course the irresponsibility of the, I believe it was a rabbi in the story of the golem, who made the golem was, well, you know, what do you do when the golem's done?
Right.
When the golem's done with the task that you put in its mouth, what do you do? Now you've created this thing. It has a need. It has a purpose.
Right, right.
So,
what does it do afterwards?
Yeah, yeah. What does it do afterward? And even the fact of, you know, an artisan who is releasing something and sculpting something out of, be it wood, stone, metal, whatever, you know, they are imbuing that with something. I'm only a musical artist.
Correct.
I'm only a musical artist, but I have had more than one person step into my studio and, quote, jam with me, and after about 30, 40 minutes, be like, wow, that felt really weird. Like, because of the energy that I put off while I'm doing that, and not everybody can, like, jibe with that energy, you know? So very much the same way, like, my music is imbued with that energy. And same way with an artist, whenever they paint something, sculpt something, what have you. So, could it be that these things are remnants from golems in the past? Something like
that? Yes, absolutely. You know, you first you have the consciousness and then you have the image it wants to possess.
Mm.
You know, it gets back into what's called intramural burial. In antiquity, the idolaters, if they had someone in their family die, they would go out and they would make a statue in the image of that ancestor. And that ancestor was believed to possess the statue. Right. And then even further on, again, it's fascinating how these entities have evolved throughout history, because they're definitely not ignorant. You know what I mean? They're not the dumbest among us. They're very, very, very intelligent. And so one of the footprints I've really noticed that I've been getting into lately is this understanding that they learned somehow to merge their consciousness with metal, right? See, a lot of people pay attention to the image itself, but I'm more into, okay, how did they do that, right? How did they know to do that? And we know they had that ability because if we get into the literature, we know they were created what are called teraphim, where your idolaters and your necromancers, they were taking small pieces of metal, carving the names of their ancestors, or in the Hebrew, it's tumarua, unclean spirit. They were carving their names into that metal and then implanting that into bodies, and the consciousness of that ghost would merge with the metal and then take control over the body that it was implanted in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, these entities are highly evolved and, you know, it's very interesting stuff.
Well, and, you know, specifically, once again, because that it's really curious, the idea of wanting to possess something that looks like them.
Correct.
I mean, typical demonology, things like that. Of course, demons are vain. Vanity was the whole reason for the fall. You know, so being attracted to something, be it shiny or even as it shows in the movie Constantine, like being enamored with their own reflection.
You know, there we go.
Something like that. But this is not so easily distracted and seems a whole lot more purposefully targeted. Because once again, as opposed to the demon, which just exists and is just an energetic form, this is almost more of a thought form and really much more of something that needs that energy in order to exist.
Correct. And they are parasitic in nature. So like one of the biggest texts that I really like getting into is the Apocrypha of John. I talk about it everywhere I go because, you know, I have a history of being in the Christian church and I grew up hearing about Genesis 6, the Nephilim and all of that. And it never really made any sense to me. You know, your moralists talk about the great fall of the angels and how they made it. The moralists say, you know, that they were sexually attracted to them or, you know, all that stuff. And what's most interesting to me, though, is that these entities first appeared to women in the images of their husbands. And so, you know, they literally took the appearance of the husband that these women were intimate with. And it's very interesting, too, because the Apocryphon of John says that that as they were accosting them, as they were assaulting these women, they changed their apparition to what they really looked like. And then they performed a ritual. And it was an obstetric ritual that they believed that whatever man, the woman was focused upon at the moment of insemination, she would birth the material image of in that man, in that child, right? So in other words, we have these apparitions who are trying to father babies that look like their spirits, their own apparitions. And so what a lot of people miss is they confuse the software and the hardware, because the software was the apparition. The hardware was the baby that it had stepped into. Does this make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And once again,
it's terrifying.
That is what makes it oh so nefarious and just mind-numbingly frightening, Daniel.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Or Nathaniel.
Yeah, because we're looking at fleshly eyes with ghostly sight. Right? It's not just the eyeball that's seeing into us. It's the presence, the consciousness, the apparition that hovered over that baby, right, that's in it. And I'll tell you something else that's very interesting, and this is now we're going to get into some of the literature, what it has to say about the Rephaim, because, you know, I like all of the some of the evangelical researchers that are, you know, researching the UFO phenomenon and science and all that, but I think a lot of them focus too much on the hardware aspect. They don't realize that there was consciousness in these giants. And so if we look at the software, we need to realize that that's a motor. You know, once that body that it's possessing dies, it's going to make a new one. It's going to step into a new body.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
right?
not going to not
it's
do
troubling.
That. Like you said, I mean, it's not going to not do that. Like you said, it is a software. Mm-hmm. What it's embodying is hardware. Same thing as any computer virus. Like, it's going to jump to the closest computer as a means of survival.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, these entities have existed throughout history. And I think that's one of the most fascinating aspects of this. It's not just that they're replicating their species, but it's the programs, right? What they're doing to us in order to do, you know, in order to use us to self-replicate. You know, I mean, we have cases throughout all of history where women are visited by entities in their dreams. And in the dream state, these women think, okay, it is no big deal. This is just a bad nightmare. It's not even real. And then they wake up the next day, you know, and they're, you know, it occurred, you know. They woke up with bruises they received in the dream they just got out of. And you know, that's a lot of my research lately is not just understanding, okay, you know, it's one thing to say they're using it to self-replicate, but how are they manipulating our senses to get us, you know, into the position of being manipulated? That's where I'm at right now, because their abilities are far beyond what I think many people are willing to admit.
Well, I think that much like any problem, Nathaniel, you first have to admit that you have a problem. You first have to admit that it exists. You know, like we are just now getting to the point, and granted, rapidly to the point of disclosure and want to know, Nathaniel, that quite literally the term UFO denier is used by the media. Whereas 5-6 years ago, you know, anywhere before December 17th, 2017, that would not have been the case. That would not have been the case.
Correct.
UFO enthusiast, maybe investigator, but typically local man with an interest in the paranormal, you know. And once again, we have to be willing to admit that with or without our penchant for religion, Nathaniel, and you, you are by no means like a Bible thumping Christian, man. Like, I follow you on Facebook. We swap steak pictures, dude. Like,
I know.
And you know, I'm not. I used to be a Catholic seminarian, and I'm not, because the logic of that, the leaps of logic of that, make no sense to me. My faith isn't shaken. My faith in my God and something bigger than me in the universe and my place in it as a cog in the machine, in the watch, keeping time unshaken. My belief in a church and an institution and my faith in that more than shaken. But that doesn't mean that my eyes aren't open, and that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to accept the truth that there is good, there is evil.
Correct.
And I think
it exists.
Yeah, it exists. And if you aren't willing to just say it exists, then the concept of this is fully allowed to run amok in the universe, because you are fully willing to accept the fact that it is not there, that it does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was a lot of my problem with the church, man, was mm-hmm. the fact that mm-hmm. I went to my spiritual director with a situation like that, with a real question. And they were like, well, the church didn't really have a teaching on that. I'm like, well, I kind of have a problem with that.
They better get one soon.
Like,
they better have one soon, brother.
You're literally telling me that, like, evil is stalking my soul around every corner, but, you know, the afterlife like that, you know, we don't really have a teaching on that. There's heaven, there's hell, but ghosts, paranormal, you know, demons, whatnot, I don't know about that. It's like, wow.
Right.
You've literally asked me to accept everything on spectral evidence, but when it comes to that, we need something concrete.
until they can somehow manipulate your experience to take authority over you, then all of a sudden it's useful to them to acknowledge it, right?
And that's not to say anything to the good men that wear the collar that I am friends with. You know, but the majority, much like the majority of society, will not sit down and have that hard conversation with you.
Right. It has to do with Western scholarship. Your Eastern literature does discuss these many issues because they were experiencing the phenomenon. They were willing to be open about it. Mm. And, you know, it's like I say this all the time. There's a lot of experiencers in the church.
Yeah.
They just don't want to. They don't want to admit it. They're too afraid. And a lot of them are like me when I was growing up. Like, I don't know what I'm experiencing. I'm sure as heck not going to tell them about it. If I do, you know, which I did a couple people, and you know, they just didn't know what to do, and it ended up hurting me more than it helped me.
Yep.
But you know, they need to get a plan together, because it's just like we were talking about either today or yesterday. My God, guys, this stuff's shaping up quickly. The number one abductee. Yeah. Number one abductee right now is being told by his mediator with the Invisible College that the beings they're in contact with has given him permission to go into churches and to lay hands on people.
Now, does that mean? What does that mean? Because, I mean, a lot of people know in the typical spiritual church sense what a laying on of hands means. You know, a healing, a direct praying for something like that. But what are the implications of this? What are the implications of this person being told that you now have the power within you to go lay hands in this space?
Oh, well, okay. So let's back up and say, and let's talk about what the laying on hands was. It was an exorcistic ritual. In other words, it originated in the fivefold ministry in the New Testament. I'm going to lay hands on you and I'm going to cast the devil out. And I'm going to cast it out by virtue of the power that is in me. What they're literally telling this individual is that we're going to offer the power in you that you're going to use to heal these individuals with. Now, I can't stress this enough, guys. It's one thing to be a nuts and bolts ufologist who is atheistic about this phenomenon, saying, you know, these are just aliens. Here's a question. What kind of alien is telling people to go lay hands on people in churches?
Yeah.
Right? So what they're doing, literally, in one fleeting moment, they're taking the conversation out of the hands of the agnostic and the atheist. Now it's placing it straight in the hands of religion.
Mm.
Now we got to talk about what this means. Why they're doing this, why they think they can alter this function. The implications here are deeply apocalyptic.
Yes.
And like I said, now you're starting to stretch into my my understanding of, you know, exorcism and demonology, because Paul in the New Testament says, if another Jesus, which ye have not received. I'm going to go down this road real quick.
Go ahead. Go.
I'm only doing this, guys. I'm getting real passionate. I'm only doing this because this is what they're bringing up. It's not
run
like Daniel saying,
road.
Hey, man.
Run down that road.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So Paul is talking again. If we go back to the Apocrypha of John, what occurred? What occurred was an entity manifested as a husband to a wife. The symbolism here is not just the image. It's also the covenant that it's manifesting as.
Yes.
And so what Paul is doing is he's telling people, hey, listen, there's going to be another power. And that power is going to come to you, and you're going to think it's Jesus, and it's not. Oh, Lord. And then he goes even further. It's very interesting. This is chilling. It doesn't just say, okay, if another Jesus, which you have not preached, comes to you. And then he says, if another spirit, which ye have not received, if you receive that, we have a problem. And so what he's talking about is this anti-Jesus, and we get a lot of people get it wrong. They think that this is it's going to be an anti-Christ. No, it's not. It's a replacement Christ. It's a movement that comes out of the spiritual realm that says, listen, I know you have power, but I have power too. And now I want to tell you, I want you to start laying hands on me. That's literally, I hate to say it like this because I used to have a dislike for a lot of evangelical researchers because I thought they were so dogmatic. But this is literally coming from the head of the Invisible College.
Yeah.
To the most famous abductee who is now actively laying hands on people and healing them. So this is literally right out of the Bible, whether we want to admit it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, it's... The laying on of hands is absolutely biblically founded. It was a practice that was regularly used. And once again, the laying on of hands is something that is only, aside from a general healing in the Catholic Church, something like that, only reserved for very few.
Correct.
To allow this, one of the things that we have talked about numerous times on this show and that we talked about in that private conversation, or at least I brought up, was the concept of Operation Bluebeam. Years ago, when we had the Incarnation Dudes and Beer, and we first started having folks like you on, folks like John Hall, stuff like that, I contacted a gentleman who will not be named, but helped start a major network involved with ufology, things like that. He listened, and I want to say it was right after we had like the head of the Joseph Campbell Society on, and I sent him a copy of that, and he was like, great episode, that was fantastic. I would love to come on your show, but I don't do public speaking anymore in that right. And I was like, oh, well, that's a shame. I would love to talk with you about your years in work in the disclosure community and everything that you did and the founding of your channel and how much it meant toward the mainstreaming of the cause of disclosure. And at that point, he asked that we take the conversation private. And man, this man laid out the fact of he will not speak publicly anymore because he has too many friends in the world of ufology and research who have been killed. He made no bones about it. Not like died under mysterious circumstances or, you know, killed. He said killed. Man used those six letters, killed. He was like, I love my family too much. I cannot put them through that. I can't put them through the targeting that they would go through in this day and age with it, much less what they went through back in the day. I wish you Godspeed. He was like, but everything I am hearing from my military contacts high up, things like that, is that they are preparing for a Project Bluebeam type activity. They are preparing people for a world of disclosure that will lead to a major incident that will basically cause what people will think and believe is the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
All under the guise of control. This second coming, of course, coming about and saying, listen, this is the whole reason for your problem here is that you don't have one world. Everybody should be one. And that whole thing. Say what you will about it, but boy, howdy, there's a lot of things going on right now.
it's moving towards definitely a cataclysm.
Yeah.
I mean, every second, every moment, it seems like that clock is running, and we're running out of time. And it doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere with disclosure. I mean, you know, yeah, we have a couple pictures, and, you know, we have people like Mick West and a bunch of other people on Twitter that are, doing their best to debunk them. But, I mean, what do these people truly know? You know what I mean? I mean, and we've had fleeting moments of, you know, where the veil thins, and we have Lou Elizondo and different speakers come out and say, you know what? You know, if we knew the truth, or if the public knew the truth, it would be a very somber moment. You know, there was another guy, I forget his name, he's talking about how he was briefing the Pentagon, and he said, you know, when we were done being briefed, one man was buried his head in his hands crying. He said, I don't want my daughters to grow up in this world. It doesn't seem like it's love and light. Just does it. you know what I mean? So whatever they know... This isn't going to be, you know, fuzzy wuzzy was a bear. This is going to be like, wait a minute. So, you know, I think we as a movement, as a field of research, need to prepare ourselves for the possibility that, again, these entities are not alien and they're not just interdimensional. You know, it's like we get back to that you know, I see it as the number one experience, but he's the most famous at this point. He's most documented, and he's changing the whole narrative. You know, the Pentagon keeps sending scientists to him full degrees, and he's saying, you know, the reason they're sending them to me is because they cannot contact these beings. I am. And what are these beings telling him? It's you know, and I hate to ramble, but it's a lot like what Diana Pasuka, you know, she's a religious scholar. Why is she studying this phenomenon now? Because it's almost like they're trying to start another religion. You know what I mean? And I think it does fall back into that one world government, because they're going to want to have a leader.
Well,
and
I think unfortunately most people are seeing that religion with a hard R and a capital R.
Yeah.
And they are, because, you know, the one thing we bring up on this show all the time, man, is the science, the religion of science. The fact that, well, science says it. You know what? For a long time, science didn't say that. And if science hadn't questioned themselves, that kind of sounds like a dogma and a doctrine situation, not like a scientific method. Let's keep experimenting and test further hypotheses.
Correct. It's a very unique situation, you know, like Jacques Vallée for sure said that we have metamaterials and that there is a technological aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But let me say this too, for all the listeners out there, we have a massive problem here. Diana Pasuka went to Rice University and lectured, and in her lecture she said that the Invisible College is using esotericism to reach the phenomenon.
Now, this is more than once. I am aware of the Invisible College. Let's cover that for a second, because I think a lot of what we're talking about here, especially the exposure of this, like you're saying, comes down to that and comes down to the understanding of that and the willingness to accept that esoteric knowledge within the everyday world. You know, like we're getting ready to have a guest on in a couple weeks, all about 32nd and above degree masonry. And that really is one of those like esoteric schools. You can get into that and the Illuminati and everything else, but it is a school of secrets. And the whole point is that as you grow and go down that path of the unfinished pyramid, that your eyes are open to certain truths, and along that way your world will be destroyed numerous times, and what you know to be the world and the way the world works will be destroyed numerous times, And we're up against that right now as a society, Nathaniel, of what we know being the world around us, being governments, being religions, all of that is getting ready to come tumbling down. And like the prime example was the Vatican, and granted, they consulted with a bunch of theologians. They basically put into a study fund, and the study fund part of it was some theologians talking about, you know, the implications of the finding of alien life.
Right. Will we allow ourselves to baptize them, right? All of that.
Sure. Sure. Well, not only that, but it's one of those, you know, if you want to talk just thought-wise, thought principle-wise, if there's one group of people aside from traditional Judaism that has kept something pretty well unchanged and kept their message pretty well the same the whole world over, it's the church. So if you want to get a unified message across to everybody, how do you do that? Across borders, across cultures. You know, and a lot of that comes straight out of religion. How do you get them to accept it, follow it? How do you get them to accept it, follow it, and not change it in 2 years?
Go talk to some rabbis.
Go talk to some men with collars. They'll tell you exactly how that's done.
Absolutely. And this is very interesting because since we're on the subject of esotericism and hidden societies, you know, Malachi Martin was virtually crucified because he went around everywhere telling people that there were Satanists.
Yep.
And yeah, I'm just going to throw that out there. Don't crucify me. But you know what I mean? We have to look at this because, again, like you said, how would they propagate their gospel? How would they, you know, start creating new traditions? I tell people all the time that, you know, it's not just that we have certain experiencers that are actually manifesting these entities. It's not that, because I've never believed in just the miracle, right? I'm after the message. And so, you know, we can have apparitional manifestation. Sure, we could see these guys on camera. When I really start paying attention is when they start teaching doctrine, right? Not just manifestations, not just the, you know, the white lady that manifests, but what are they teaching you? Are they teaching you something? Are they giving you doctrine? Because again, when they start giving you doctrine, it's not like they're giving you recipes to cornbread. This is strictly, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is doctrine. So that means that now we have to have a different discussion in its entirety. Now we got to talk about religion. Now we have to, whether we want to or not. Now we have to get into, okay, you know, like, okay, these entities say they're watchers. Well, what do they mean by that? Why would they think that would mean something to us? You know, and it's all intertwined. But again, if these people are looking at esotericism, either, you know, if it's in the Vatican or if it's in the Invisible College, you know, we have to look into what they're researching and the text that they're researching. And I believe that Posuka and other researchers have pointed to some of the texts and some of the rituals that these people are performing. And it has to do with Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons.
Well, and you know, when you're talking Invisible College, of course, you know, you're talking about things like Bohemian Grove.
Correct.
All kinds of, even here recently, what was the, as we talked about before the show, the Republican candidate who was talking about the orgy. A drug party who was like, yeah, you know, and here it is. I've got it up right here at a Daily Beast. Angry GOP responds to Cathorn's bizarre DC orgy claims and naming names. I wouldn't go as far as to say bizarre, because once again, we have numerous situations where we have senators, congressmen caught up in human trafficking rings, caught up in, you know, sex for sale with teenagers. Even, you know, we brought up on the show before, I brought it up to you earlier, even those horrible Pizzagate emails that led to the death of some people at a pizza place that, didn't have a torture chamber in the back. all that. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. But they never did deny the rest of what was in those. They mm-hmm. didn't deny them. They were really upset with how the emails were obtained, but they never denied the contents, you know? Mm-hmm. And once again, these mm-hmm. folks are upset with, like, hey, what are you doing? You can't talk about the Tuesday night party on Wednesday at the water cooler.
And, you know, it's so funny because, like, we were talking about before the show, that's so self-incriminating. Like, it's just funny to me, man, because it's like, okay, like, here he is trying to raise awareness. And it's like, wait a minute. You know somebody who does that?
Hey, what do you mean talking about the cocaine? I mean, there's no cocaine.
And then, he's in deep water, man. So, you know, it's the hot water, rather. It's like, well,
you want to talk about
if you're wanting us to believe you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's frightening to see it almost in plain sight now. And, you know, I have been wanting for the longest time, Nathaniel, to do an episode on adrenochrome harvesting, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There is a whole deep, dark rabbit hole of things that involve these emails that we're talking about, involve mm-hmm. stuff like the laying on of hands, involve things like the cremation of care, that go down that rabbit hole and go down rabbit holes like what we're talking about right now, where it's, is this being done as a means by which to feed these spirits?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the parasites, the parasitic entities. You know, it's very interesting that you mention that. You know, I can't help but think of Epstein. And I don't know. I don't even know if we can mention his name on this show.
Oh, but, mention it all day long.
Okay. One of the biggest things about Epstein was once they got into his island and into his mansion, he had like a ritualistic setup there.
Yeah.
One person said that he actually had not really a life size, but it's almost like a miniature room size of the temple. And they said that's where he was performing his rituals, which, you know, a lot of this stuff was Kabbalistic in terms of, like, you know, the rituals that he had performed and his knowledge about it all. And it really does come down to exploitation. And it's like I said, you know, it's not just the sexual aspect of it, it's the ritualistic aspect of it. And, you know, and I hate to go this direction, but it's already there. You know, when you get into the protocols of Crowley and how he was into sex magic, and I say protocols because, again, at the Invisible College are using these same techniques to reach these entities.
Yep.
And they're actually like Jack Parsons was even mentioned. Guys, Jack Parsons was a pedagogue. He was a student of Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad that we have to have that conversation. But you cannot validate the man without validating his methods.
Yes.
And his methods are deeply disturbing. It wasn't just, you know, a couple words and a couple of mantras. No, he was into chaos magic, sex magic.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff. And I hate to say it, but, you know, if that's what it takes to communicate with these entities, I don't want to do it.
Same. You know, and granted, like you go through my tablet. Hey, I got tons and tons and tons of PDFs of, you know, the grimoire of Ariel and the, mm-hmm. you know, all of the ritualistic magic of Solomon, things like mm-hmm. that. I've read all of that. I'm not going to go out to a crossroads with a pullet.
Right.
You know? Like, I'm just not going to do that because the intent of that, you know,
right.
kind of like playing with a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
Harmless. Yes. A toy that says Milton Bradley in the corner. However, the intent of that is what you have to mm-hmm. be careful of.
Right.
We talk about it on this show all the time, the fact that you go back and you read Kabbalistic teaching, we are connected. Our words mm-hmm. are connected with creation. us being one of the only creatures breathed life into by the creator, we have the power to create above most other creatures. You know, a raccoon cannot just go out and like build a car out of a bunch of scraps. It would be really hard.
Right.
We have the means by which to create things, and whether that means in a spell or manifestation or bringing it about in the world or breathing life into a clay statue that then requires life to live or a task by which to live, you know, and something to keep feeding itself. That is fully what we're talking about here, spirits that have been created.
Correct.
And put into motion. And I guess the really disturbing thing to think about, Nathaniel, is that we aren't necessarily just dealing with like old gen here, you know? we aren't just dealing with the same gen and spirits and elementals that Solomon had control over. Which were angels, demons, all kinds of things. These are things that have been specifically created.
Right. They have, in Hebrew, they were called unclean spirits, ruach, to breathe life into the nostrils. That's a creation narrative out of Genesis. When you life into the nostrils of Adam. So again, you're right, it's a specific kind of entity. And it's mutating as we speak. You know, it's very troubling to me because I often deal with case studies of women or even marriages that, you know, they're dealing with these molters, and, you know, the wife will say, you know, the entity, he's, you know, he'll appear to me at nighttime. You know, I've had them sleep in between the husband and wife at night. You know, I was doing a show where a lady had contacted Brother Host and said the other night, she said, you know, she had heard I was going to be on it. She knows my research with these molters. She said the other night, she said she felt she was having relations with her husband. And she said, and then she said, my husband got off the bed. She said, looked at me in a really weird way. And then she said, and then that's when I started noticing that there were certain facial features that didn't belong to my husband. She said, and instantly, she said, he grinned and then turned into a smoky apparition and walked down the hallway. She said, that's when I looked over and noticed that my husband had been next to me in bed, asleep, the whole time. So,
wow.
This is a very real phenomenon. And, you know, and there are very severe implications for us when we start realizing the ways that they're bypassing all of our instinctual senses here. You know, it's literally not just inducing us to sleep states. It's making us believe that we're doing one thing with one person. And then in reality, you know, we're not. It's something completely different. And it's troubling.
Yeah.
Because if these are the entities people are trying to get in contact with for the sake of technology, no, you're not gonna put a handcuffs on a tiger.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. As you can probably tell from the shelf behind me, folks, I'm a bit of a comic book nerd, and one of the characters that I love is Spawn by Todd McFarlane, and the whole mythology behind Spawn is that he was a government assassin who brought many souls to the afterlife, and when his time came, he was given the choice to stay or leave. He could go back and see his wife again, but he would have to lead Hell's Army. Now, he came back, realized that he made a really bad deal, but the trick is, along the lines, and this was the twist in the story of Spawn, was that it wasn't actively him that they were after. It was his offspring. And Al Simmons, his former self, couldn't have offspring. But Spawn, being the Hellspawn, could. So he actively took the body and took on the form of his friend, who his wife is now married to, had sex with her, and impregnated her.
And there we go.
And now gave birth to what would be the Antichrist and the end of it all. because of his want. And I guess that's the issue that we come down to when you read a lot of biblical accounts, especially of angels, things like that. They were always unrecognized, but human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they came in human form, and it wasn't until the message came, "Hey, Rebecca, you're gonna have a child. Hey, mm-hmm. Mary, you're gonna be with child. But I don't know, man. I know, but you're gonna have a child." It's a little bit different at that point because they aren't necessarily embodying something. They're appearing in a form, and that's the form that they have, but it's not like they are purposefully embodying and deceiving the way that these entities are doing.
Right. Correct. And a lot of times this is very interesting too. It's, you know, it's not just that these entities are changing their appearances in a cosmetic way. You know, let me say this. Like I said, it's not that they're just changing their appearances to husbands. We've had cases of abduction where they have changed themselves into Jesus. And this gets very troubling, guys. You know, like, what kind of an alien knows about Jesus? What, you know, why would he want to appear as Jesus? What's really going on here? And I can't stress enough with everybody listening, you know, the danger here with CE5 is you don't know what you're contacting. You know, and we...
Yeah. And you know, I discuss that regularly whenever we have mediums on, whenever we have people, mm-hmm. because believe me, I want to have Stephen Greer on and talk about the CE5 protocols. I think it's really amazing some of the results that they are getting. But mm-hmm. yeah, much like, hey, Army, military, are you approaching this thing right? Hey, average people who are gathering together, are you all certain that you aren't being deceived?
Correct.
You know? You know, hey, who's to say what deception is? Who's to say what is or isn't? This is all kind of unknown territory for all of us. But,
right.
Yeah, you have to be careful, and you have to be willing to accept that maybe the tinkering that you're doing it's all bells that can't be unrung, you know?
Yes.
Even myself with the RF fields I was playing with and things like that here in my studio, like, it's bells that can't be unrung. I don't know what plasma fields I differentiated in another universe. Beats me. But I did it,
mm-hmm.
you know? Mm-hmm. And what does it take right now, Nathaniel, for people to recognize this, for people to be able to see this in the world around them? I guess that's really the big burning question on my mind and probably most of the audience right now is how, like, so these molters are out there, and can we get rid of them? Can we stop them like Freddy Krueger by just going like, nope, sorry, molter, you don't exist? How do we handle this situation, and how do we move forward now that we have the knowledge that these things are there and what they are?
Well, I say this. As much religious literature we have that talks about them, very little works against them. I mean, like, you know, we have cases where people have been abducted by these entities and they're in the middle of saying the Lord's Prayer and their eyes roll back in their head. So it's concerning to me because, you know, I grew up in evangelical Christendom and I always was taught, you know, hey guys, these guys obeyed certain laws and certain commandments. And I want to believe that's true. And we've had evidence of, you know, if you say the name of Jesus or if you, you know, call out a religious figure, they disappear. But a lot of these entities fall into the classification Sinistrari, Father Sinistrari gave them, which were, they were pagan demons.
Yeah.
And the reason he called them pagan demons is because one day he was on a dirt road And he met one of these entities. One of these entities just walked out of the woods, out of the path that he was on. And Sinistrari was a Franciscan priest, and he did everything he knew to do. And the entity looked at him and said, that may work for other entities. He said, but it doesn't work on me. And so, you know, we have to, again, we can't, we will never know what they're afraid of until we understand what they have faith in. And right now they're bypassing a lot of stuff, guys. I mean, like, you know, when you get into abductee accounts, we're talking about people that set up video cameras and chain and handcuff themselves to the bed.
Yeah.
And then they remember being abducted. They go back to the film and they see themselves out of nowhere, unhandcuff themselves, and then go and take the camera out.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't know how much power they have over us, over the common man and the common woman. We do know for sure that throughout history, they have manipulated reality. They've manufactured our consent, and they've publicly engineered us. So it's troubling, the implications here.
I love the way that you say manufactured our consent.
Yeah.
Because that is such an easy thing to do. It is such easy because by all rules, celestially, temptation is allowed. And at that point, it is up to your weak or strong flesh to resist or give in, you know. And I mean, as is obvious in the book of Job, where the devil literally just pops up in heavenly court and is like, oh, Job, let's have some fun. Want to bet? What you got what you got riding on it, you know? So obviously it's the fact of these two things are not at such battle that they don't realize their mutual need. They don't realize they don't not realize their mutual existence, you know, and the need of mutual existence and the fact that one will always have the other. However, once again, these things operate, like you just said, with the case of Padre Sinistra. It's they operate on a different level because they have because they have been created, and because they have been created, they don't necessarily have that grace, so to speak. The angel and the demon have great free will forever and always. They do not have salvific grace as humanity does, where sure we have free will, but we always have the option B to go back and to say enough and to wipe it clean. There's always that seed of grace that's there that can be gone back to. And much like an angel or a demon doesn't have that, but has free will, this has neither.
Yeah, it's tethered to its own existence. I say that these entities have what are the disability of being without being a being. And so you're everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And it's really interesting, you know. I mean, if we're looking at these entities through the lens of the Akkadian text, these are your little spirits, because the Akkadian text says that, you know, the little entity, from where we get Lilith, were entities that they were actually human beings. And when they died, their souls left their body and they became a species of Lil.
And
it's very interesting. And then the Jewish mythology, they retranslated that, reincorporated it into their own mythology. And they said, okay, we're experiencing an entity that will manifest to men in the image of a woman, and then it'll steal seed from them.
Yeah.
Now, this is very interesting, guys. And so they knew that this entity was a little spirit, and so they called her Lilith. Or Lilith.
Yeah.
And so we see that not just in ancient texts of demonology, but we also see that in the modern UFO abduction phenomenon. you know, because we do have cases where, just like Barney Hill,
yep,
these entities came to him in the image, and, you know, they took his seed from him.
Yeah.
So you know, I believe that these succubi and incubi, these are less of persons. They're less persons than they are programs.
Mm.
Right? And so if we look at them through the lens of being a program, now we can start to see their behavioral pattern. And it just, you know, the rabbit hole gets deeper from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, especially in the concept of incubus succubus, the idea of old hag syndrome. And like,
right.
I myself have had a couple of situations where I have woken up and seen dark entities at the end of my bed with their hands mm-hmm. on me, things like that. So I have definitely had those experiences in my life that were visceral enough for me, and that I have enough memory of
mm-hmm.
and remember other things that happened while it was happening that were confirmed that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I utterly believe that they are real. Now, was that something that I attracted to me? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. through things that I was doing in my life, the way I was living my life, all that. What can we do to A, identify these entities, and B, I guess really not necessarily exorcise them, because, well, you know, can we exorcise them? Can we get rid of them or obliterate them? And if not, what can we do to help prevent them and keep them away from us? Because, like, I know I am somebody, I have a very, very good friend who's a listener that he's got what I call his own ent. I have ent, short for entity, follows me around. Mm-hmm. And my wife's been there. We're literally, I'm like, where the heck is this thing? She's like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I literally just had it in my hand. I set it down right here. And then we both turn around, mm-hmm. and there it is. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just one of those things that it's just there bugging you. It's there doing it to you just to prod you and make you think you're crazy and to annoy your day. That's an ent. Like you said, an imp. Things mm-hmm. like that. And yes, certain people have them that are just kind of attached to them. But what can you do to spot these things? What can you do to help mitigate that, Nathaniel?
I look for, if it's a personal, let's say somebody came to me off the street and said, hey, listen, I'm dealing with A, B, and C. I always look at the person themselves. What is your dream state like? Like, have you been experiencing nightmares? Is there a heaviness about you? Do you feel watched? You know, have you had a breakup recently? Have you had a divorce recently? Has there, you know, if it's a woman, these entities, for some reason or another, they like to plague women who have had trauma in their past. You know, I had friends of my family that came to me one time, and they came to me because their daughter was experiencing one of these entities. And I go into trances, and I said, okay, I went into a trance, and I said, I see a man to my left. His name is Dan. He smokes. He has a mustache. And I said, I know for sure. I said, this man has sexually assaulted a woman. I said, who is he? And the mother, she said, that's my ex-husband. He's dead now. I said, okay. I said, now this is not the entity. I said, but Dan is telling me, this is crazy. I don't know how it happened, but it did. But he said, you know, he said that this entity attached itself to my daughter because she was attacked by another man, and she's been dealing with this trauma. And it's been using that unresolved way yeah. to gain access to her. And so I went into a trance, and I told this lady and her husband, I said, there's going to come a day where you're going to sit down. I laid out their living room for them. I said, okay, there's a fireplace in the middle. There's a chair here. There's a couch there. I said, you need to sit her down, and you need to tell her what you know. Tell her, hey, listen, did something happen to you? And sure enough, word for word, that happened. She broke down crying to them and said, yes, that 100%. I haven't told anybody about it. I figured, you know, I'd wait and see what happens with me emotionally. She's like, but a lot of this stuff's too heavy. Once we exposed that connection that entity had, that entity left, never returned again. So a lot of, again, specifically with women, a lot of these entities will attack women who have had trauma in their past or in their present.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, and it really is just the fact of healing from that is hard. Healing from that spiritually is hard, whether you're a man or a woman. And a lot of that leads down paths of addiction, which psychologically and spiritually and psychically weaken the person even more. You know, and it's really a self-deprecating, self-realizing cycle. That's really, really sad and scary. That yes, these things definitely want to attach themselves to, because, I mean, it's no different than the way once you hit a certain point of alcoholism, your body will start rejecting solid food because your body and your liver are like, whoa, man, why do you want us to do all this work and like convert all that complex sugar into alcohol to burn, to fuel you? Like, you're just giving us fuel. We aren't going to do that. You know, and very much it's easy to fall into that with these entities. It's easy to fall into that same trap where, because it's easier, they tend to attach yourself on. Tend to attach themselves onto you.
Correct. And a lot of times, like, okay, in the 16th century, we had individuals that were being attacked in their sleep, like I said, and then waking up and realizing that they had physical manifestations of what occurred to them in that dream. And yet, so at first it began as them being attacked. Then it mutated into them being possessed by their attackers. Sounds like UFO abduction phenomenon. And not just that, but these individuals who were being invaded by and I say alien, not as an extraterrestrial, but these individuals who were being invaded by an alien consciousness, they begin to have shared memories. And like the entities that had possessed them was like literally projecting memories into these individuals' minds to where they didn't know what to believe. Right?
Yeah.
What really happened to me? Did that actually happen to me, or am I misremembering it? And, you know, a lot of this is trauma-based. I did a lecture, like you said, for Forbidden Knowledge, and in that I talked about how there was, you know, this one abductee, she's out of Dr. Carla Turner's book, Taken. She said that she was just in her living room sleeping one afternoon, and these translucent entities walked into her living room and, like, put her in a trance and sexually assaulted her.
Wow.
Now, you know, a lot of shows won't let me talk about that because a lot of them, you know, especially people in the field, they'll try to silence these negative accounts and they'll gaslight. Here, I'm going to get on my little rant here, gaslight experiencers.
Yeah, apple box it.
Yeah, man, put lipstick on the pig. And, you know, let's hope if we ignore it long enough and well enough, these people will eventually go away. And yet we have to talk about it and be honest about it because, again, these entities will cause trauma in lives. It's no different than that young woman whose family called me because even though, you know, she was existing, had a job, had a family, the trauma that she had experienced was working on her body now, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we have abductees who are experiencing the same thing. And I do believe it's just, you know, it's all connected to these entities. And I think that the more we talk about it, the more comfortable these people will be with telling their stories.
Well, and that's just it. You know, we talk about things all the time, like abductees. We talk about it with Terry Lovelace, who used to be a former assistant state attorney general, you know, stuff like that. He didn't come out with his abduction experience till years after he retired because imagine, you know, you see people like Mike Heston Rogers, who, yeah, he wasn't even the guy who was Travis Walton and taken away. But just being a part of that experience has all but ruined his life. You know, so it's hard to want to come forward. And much like any sexual or abuse experience, it's hard to want to come forward. And it's hard to want to say that this thing happened to you. But without it coming forward, do we know it's happening? And do we start researching it? Do we start looking into it? Do we start taking numbers? You know, it's much like the whole conundrum legally of male sexual abuse and how many men are abused sexually. We don't really know the numbers because most men don't go report it.
Correct. So, yeah, they're often told, hey, you're a man, you got to get over it.
Yeah. You know? And it's very much the same way with people that are abductees, people that have experienced things like this. Like, hey, even myself, as someone entering the seminary, man, like when I told people that I had experiences of ecstatic prayer, things like that, like their reaction was a bit different than I would think it would have been for somebody in the seminary. Let's just say that.
Leave it at that.
You know? Like, I could say it in a judgmental way, but at the same time, that's no different than me coming out of the seminary and seeing the average person as somebody being led by a nose ring, you know? Like, that's not the right mentality to have either, just because they haven't had that awakening experience in their life.
Correct.
So what do we do to educate people without discounting their want to not believe, Nathaniel? What do we do to advocate for this? What do we do to get out in front of this situation? And whether, you know, whether you put the label of Molter on it or not, how do you make people aware of it before we let you go?
Well, I look for advocacy. I want to be an advocate for experiences that are not getting their stories told, and really who have no representation. You know, when I first started talking about the behavioral pattern of the Molters and how, you know, it wasn't just that they were attracted to the women, but they were trying to replicate through their wombs, I started having women reach out to me, email me, you know, message me on social media saying, hey, you know, you won't believe this, and I have never told anybody, you know, but This is not just one woman. I'm talking at least a dozen, where these women say, you know, I was being abducted and being accosted by these entities until I got a hysterectomy. And once I got the hysterectomy, you know, literally to the point, dude, I'm telling you. So what happened was they never told their story. I'm getting passionate, Christopher, man, I'm telling you. So they never told their story because they believe that, you know, people are going to freak out. They're not going to believe me. I'm going to sound crazy. But once I pulled that behavioral pattern out of history and said, hey, listen, this is what I'm noticing, all of a sudden they come out of the woodwork. I had one woman who said that she's been abducted her whole life and that she had a hysterectomy. And then one night these same entities tried to abduct her. They were hovering over her. And she said they were running tests on her body, and when they realized that she no longer had the ability to procreate with them, they verbally abused her, made fun of her body, and then they just left her completely alone. Wow. So that's why I'm raising awareness to researchers. It's not just beauty here they're after, right? They're looking to self-replicate through these women.
Wow. Yeah, and I mean, we need to do a whole episode on that, a whole episode on the hybridization that is possibly going on. Once again, the rabbit hole goes far and deep when you get into these things, and this is just the surface of the topic of Molters, their connection to aliens, their connection to the abduction phenomena. Even though they are not aliens, man, it's just so mind numbing Nathaniel, to sit back and think about it. And I'm so glad that there are people like you who are not only advocating this and getting this out there and getting this information out there, but taking in reports from people without judgment.
Right. Right.
So, where can people go to get a hold of you? Where can they go to find your work? Where can they go to give you a report and and help further this research?
Okay. So I used to have a website, but then I thought, man, I have a website when I'm all over social media, and I'm on social media more than I was on my website. So you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, all under the name of Nathaniel Gillis or Nathaniel J. Gillis. I'm trying to build my YouTube channel. You know, I don't have a podcast like you do, but what I do periodically, I try to do it once a week. I'll get on my YouTube channel. I'll update some people on my research and, you know, for about maybe 20, 30 minutes. But that's how you reach me.
The Collins and, Elite episode that you did was great.
Oh, you saw that? Sweet. Yeah, man. And that was just a cursory touch of it. You know, there's a lot more to get into, and perhaps that's another show. But I've really enjoyed myself once again, brother, and thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, absolutely. You can go find all of those videos, folks. You can go to curiousrealm.com/videos. We have Nathaniel's channel embedded there. We are always here to help incorporate our guest stuff and make things easy to find for folks. And help support our guests. So stop on by, check that stuff out, everybody. Nathaniel, thanks again, as always, for coming and sharing your wealth of knowledge on the topic.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Demonology on the topic tonight of Molters. Your work is so entirely important. Please do keep it up.
Thank you. I'll do my best, brother. You guys have a good night.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much. We're going to go ahead and let you go. And while we let Nathaniel go, folks, once again, so sorry for the technical issues at the beginning of the episodes, the hiccups in the feed, all that kind of stuff. Very, very sorry about my voice. I really don't know what's happening. I woke up the other day and was just stricken. And as you will hear in our upcoming pre-recorded episode segment with the Southeast Texas Bigfoot folks. I was that way a few days ago. This has been like 3 days ongoing. So we'll see what's up. But man, I cannot wait to go to Mineola, Texas and check out these guys, see what they're all about, see their amazing conference. We're going to have folks like Nick Redfern out there, Lyle Blackburn, Daniel Allen Jones, her good friend, will be out there. Stay tuned through this commercial break, folks, and we will be talking with Southeast Texas Bigfoot about the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Roadshow right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get two 25 milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHemScience.com and the code is Curious7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. And welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors, especially our new sponsor, WebWorks Wireless. Those guys are still working on their website, but they are coming up with some great solutions like what we have been using Mobily for our live stream web feeds. And speaking of live stream web feeds, we have been very, very proud this year in our inaugural year as Curious Realm to become sponsor of numerous shows, including the upcoming MUFON Symposium, Folk Monster Festival, and our guests this evening are actively the founders of Southeast Texas Bigfoot. There's a fantastic Facebook page and community dedicated to that, as well as the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Roadshow coming to Mineola, Texas, April 29th. Welcome to the show, Russell and Michelle Miller. How are you guys doing this evening?
Doing great.
Doing real good. Well, we appreciate you having us on.
Oh, man, I have been excited to have you guys on. Number one, I love talking about cryptozoology. I don't think there's a lot of researchers out there. There's a lot of people that research things like UFOs, paranormal things like that. But when you talk about cryptozoology, you are talking about a very specific niche mindset and a very specific group of people that are willing to accept something that is well beyond the norm. And people that are willing to say that, yes, we should explore these topics more, these topics that, you know, Native American cultures have spoken about for generations and just accept as reality, that we kind of go, well, you're silly. So kudos to you guys for starting the Southeast Texas Bigfoot group, everything else. Tell us about what brought you to the study of cryptozoology. What was it that first got you interested in Bigfoot? Both Russell and Michelle. Let's hear that from both of you guys before we get into how you started the conference and everything else.
All righty. Yes, about 12, 13 years ago, we used to be, we started out as We Believe Paranormal. And we used to do ghost hunting and go into different areas and putting out recorders and asking for EVP sessions. And we did that a few times. And some friends of ours told us about an old cemetery from the 1800s over in the little town of
Saratoga,
Texas. So we went down in this road and we was doing our EVP session down there, probably about 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night, and didn't get anything. But the funny thing was, as we was driving in, my wife and my son, there was four of us in the truck, heard a whistle outside the window. We really didn't pay too much mind to it. We got out there, did our little EVP session, and on the way out, we stopped again, and we just sat there with the truck off, and no moon out, it's dark. And we just sat there and was listening to the woods. And I was like pretty much everybody else. I thought, or we was rather, we thought it was the Bigfoots was up in the Pacific Northwest area.
Sure.
Not
sure,
around here. And we were sitting there for about 10 minutes. And all of a sudden we heard a real loud limb break. And then we heard loud footsteps coming through the forest. And I mean, you could hear it tromping down bushes and snapping branches. And it's really, really scared us. We didn't know what it was. So we started the truck up and we took off. And there was a couple other little paranormal outfits out there. And I mentioned something to them on Facebook about it. And they said, oh, you must have heard Old Mossy Back. And I said, what is that? He said, that's what they call the Bigfoot creature out there in Saratoga. So I was a little interested in that. We looked that up, and that basically started our whole trip down this life what we're living now. It was here all this time. We thought it was, you know, several thousand miles away. And come to find out, they're right here in our own backyards. And the more we dug into it, the more we found
other locations.
Yeah, other locations.
That was easy for us to travel to. So we just started doing Bigfoot research and trying to see what this is.
We believe it's a flesh and blood animal. And there's other people who have different beliefs, and that's fine. Everybody can believe what they want. And we don't hold that against anybody. But that's basically how we got started in. And we just took it hook, line, and sinker and went and got some big light bars for the vehicles and some dash cams so we could possibly catch it crossing the road. And we've been just actively doing that for about the last 13 years now.
Wow. Wow. And you know, like I said in the show intro and the show promo, the paranormal, the way that paranormal groups work And the cooperation and the cross compatibility between people and the use of different skill sets. It is really amazing the kind of team that you can actively assemble to go out and research things like this. Now, you actively sent us a couple of audio clips. And now, granted, I've listened to shows like Coast to Coast for years. I've listened to numerous podcasts for years. There is one of these clips that you sent specifically that is probably one of the better Whoop clips that I have heard. And that is the clip that you sent from the Sam Houston State Park. Now, what a lot of people may not be familiar with about Texas is that, as opposed to many states, Texas, other than like frozen tundra, has literally just about every landmass known to man. We have mountains, marshes, we have swamps, we have forests, we like plains, valleys, like everything. East Texas in specific is known as the quote big thicket. Just insanely huge, large, thick pine forests. Specifically up around the Sam Houston State National Park. I spent quite a bit of time as a kid up around that area, in the Livingston area, and I'm going to go ahead and play this clip, which I actually took. I'll make sure and give you guys a copy of this because I actually went through and, well, I'm an audio engineer, so I nerded it up and cleaned it up. But let's
I appreciate
take,
that.
let's take a listen to this because I think it is really, really exciting and some fantastic Whoop evidence that you guys caught on tape here. Intriguing pieces of audio that I have heard in years when it comes to Bigfoot sightings, when it comes to anything like that. Let's get into your experience of recording that, because as you asked in the during the recording, Russell, early on, is that a dog? And like you said, Michelle, I've been recording for years out here. I've never heard anything like that. I've spent years out in that area and never really heard anything like that. Let's get into that evening and what led up to that recording.
Okay. I was working night shift and, I was working 6 days a week. And so on Sunday night, I didn't want to mess up my sleep schedule. So we would just hang out, watch movies, do something just like it was a regular night of work. And we decided to go out to the Sam Houston, and we went out there, and there's a little area. There's an old bridge, and you can park up on the bridge. And we sat there, and I got the recorder out, and we set it up on the roof, and we just sat there with the windows down in pitch black. It's probably about 1 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. And we wasn't hearing anything. And all of a sudden, that where you hear it, where it started, that's exactly what it sounded like. Yep. That quick. And it went on for about a minute and a half, and then it was silent. But some of that scraping around noise, I'm reaching on the roof trying to get the recorder off.
Yeah,
because I'm ready to go.
Yeah, and it
was crazy.
Even before I cleaned it up, my wife has an editing station for her podcast right behind me, and she was behind me doing some work, and I had literally just downloaded it and prepping it for today. And she was like, wow, what's that? Really wild. And she's not really familiar with these things. She doesn't watch a whole bunch of Bigfoot specials like I do, you know? I'm lucky if she watches some Curse of Oak Island with me. For her to be intrigued to begin with was amazing, much less for her to hear it and be like, wow, what's that? So for me to take the opportunity to be able to clean that up and make it a little bit more audible and clear was fantastic. And once again, I'll just play it softly in the background. Because it's just...
I think it's it's either the third or the fourth one. It gets really loud.
Yeah. It's just fascinating. And it's just such an intense sound. And like you said, there is one that was the one right there that just goes off the charts with it. And it's like, wow, wow.
You should have heard it in person. It was echoing through the woods like you can't believe.
Yeah, yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and I'll bet chilling at the same time, whether you're in a vehicle or not.
Yes, exactly.
No.
If you Googled Sam Houston National Forest and Bigfoot sightings, there's sightings that go back for 40 years.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And a lot of times we've went out there and got nothing. And then other times we go out there and something like that will happen.
Yeah.
Now, how often do you guys capture something like that? Like, as a, you know, like one trip out of 20, one trip out of 50? What are the odds that you would say that you guys normally experience on that end?
Something about like one out of 10 or so.
Yeah.
But sometimes all we get is coyotes.
Yeah.
Because we'll get out there and we'll do a little bit of what the TV show does, and we'll give a howl or we'll do a wood knock and just sit and listen.
Yeah.
And listen for the for a response. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it's just not but a bunch of coyotes. And
or like last weekend, we went camping last weekend, and me and my girlfriends, we just kind of were out there doing our own thing. And then we put a recorder and just left the recorder all night long. And Russell has analyzed that recording, and there's a howl. It's a plain as day howl, but it's far away. It's not real close up. So,
and it's about an hour after they left. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hit and miss. Anytime you go out in the woods, or even if you just are taking, you know, just a hike through the woods, it's just hit and miss. Yeah. And we were very fortunate to have gotten those.
Well, and, you know, that brings to mind how often are you doing things? And when you are, what are your methods? What's the methodology? Is it the fact that, you know, you go out, set up a few trail cams, maybe a few sound activated recorders, things like that, leave them for a few days and come back, collect them? How are you guys going about doing this?
Exactly what you said. We go out there and leave the recorders out. And to be truthful, a lot of the places we go is a public area.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to camouflage or hide your recorders. So somebody's just not hiking along and grabs it. Yeah. We have lost some things before.
Oh, I'll bet. I'll bet.
And the game cameras are the same way. I mean, you got to really camo it, not only so the animal won't see it, but so people don't see it. And
but then again, there are times when we go, we just sit. We'll just pick a spot, and we'll put a, you know, before we even roll upon the location, we have our recorder going, and the time, the date,
location,
general information, no moon, rainy, sunny, whatever. And we'll put the recorder out on top of the car, and we'll just sit at times. And see what happens that way.
It takes a little while for your eyes to adjust.
Yeah. Mm.
But we used to have the night vision monocular, like a single monocular. And it's good for seeing things moving and stuff in the middle of that, in pitch black dark.
Yeah.
But then we went ahead and bought a FLIR Scout.
Ooh.
It is a thermal imager, and you talk about really nice. It
can, yeah.
Oh yeah, you can see stuff a good distance away. You can video with it. You can take pictures with it. And this thing, I can go up and put my hand on a tree for like 5 seconds, and then move my hand, and you can see my handprint still on the tree after I walk away.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's all off of thermal. It's really nice.
And you know, especially bringing technology that like that to the table, being able to leverage that is, and you know, that was at one point stuff that would have been in the realm of like high end scientific kits, things like that. The common availability of that stuff now is so amazing.
Yes.
And the quality of it, as someone who is an audio video engineer, the quality of those products and the footage that you can get is amazing. Now, granted, there are detractors, even amongst our audience, guys, who are like, Bigfoot, you know, I don't, every time you see one of those pictures, that thing's blurry as can be. Well, you know.
Yeah.
As someone who runs video cameras for a living, I challenge you to just be walking down the trail, hear or see something, get on shot, zoom in, and get it perfectly still when you're adrenalized and going, what the heck was that?
Exactly.
I challenge you, and I'm a professional.
Like, yeah.
That's what I do. And you go like, all right, you know, the guys in football do it. Like, yeah, they have $1 million camera that is built to do it specifically.
Yeah.
Built to do that.
And they're waiting. They're knowing something's going to happen. So.
Well, yeah. Yeah. They're anticipating to begin with. But regardless, they have a camera that stabilizes and does not lose focus no matter where they point.
Yeah. But that's the reason we go with the dash cams. Because if you've ever been driving down the road and seen a deer or a rabbit or a coyote or something run across the road, it happens within 2 seconds. It's across the road and gone.
Yeah.
But if you got that dash cam running, you got it.
Yeah.
And that's where a whole lot of sightings have been recorded, is crossing roads.
Now, have you had the opportunity yet to capture anything on your FLIR or dash cam, anything like that?
I guess it was probably back in 2014. We was at Caddo Lake State Park.
Oh.
Gotta love that place. Caddo Lake is the only natural lake in the entire state of Texas.
Yep.
Everything else is man-made. And you go up there and you're expecting a dinosaur to walk out.
Yeah.
It is so prehistoric looking. We're driving around the back up there. We went camping for a week up there in 2014 and was driving around. And like I said, we got the big light bar up on the truck. And we're coming down this dead end road, and when there's something about a quarter of a mile away, there's a big green sign that shows the next road coming up, an informational sign. And that big light makes it pop real bright green. Well, we see something walk in front of that sign, about halfway up the sign. And I told her, I said, must be some hunters out here. Mm-hmm. And when we got up to the sign, we noticed it's pretty high up off the ground. So we said, well, I went ahead and shut the recorder off because I didn't want to actually try to chance of recording over it.
Sure.
And we went on back to the tent or the cabin, got up the next day and drove out there. The bottom of the sign is 8'6" off the ground.
Yep.
Wow.
And we seen a head and shoulders up above that.
Wow.
And right there where it was walking, there was a farmhouse across the street. And it crossed the road in front of the sign, and there's a big, big, like a game trail, but a very big game trail. You could almost drive a truck down through out into the woods.
It was big.
And it was real big. But like I say, it was about a quarter of a mile away, and it was only a $100 dash cam. So you can see a little bit of movement, but you can't get, you know, anything out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing of any true definition. In that way.
Yeah.
Now,
well, we sent it off to have someone else analyze it, and they also said that they could see movement in front of the sign.
Oh, wow.
But you can't really tell what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, Michelle, question for you real quick. And this is an honest question from a husband to a wife here. Was it him or you that dragged the other along amongst this? And
well, actually, I think we came to the conclusion that we wanted to do it together.
Awesome.
I mean, you know, like he said, we used to go ghost hunting. We were really heavy into ghost hunting, and we got to go every chance we could, and he would kind of be the researcher. He would say, why don't we go try here? And I'm like, let's go. Let's get that vehicle packed and gone.
Awesome.
And it was just crazy that that happened. And actually, it's called the Lance Rosier Unit, and it's in the Big Thicket. And if anybody knows anything about it, there's a cemetery at the very dead end of this thicket. And we were just out there just doing our thing. And that's what got us started into Bigfooting. So, yeah, hey, I'm ready to go and he's ready to go. All we got to say is, hey, let's go. And we grab our Bigfoot box is what we call it. And we're gone.
Heck yeah, man. That's what it's about. I personally have a go kit with, you know, I mean, everything down to Geiger counter. It's geeked out and ready to rock. And you never know. So yeah, it is there. It's ready. That's how nerdy I am. I always love, especially whenever there's couples, finding out how that got started amongst the two of you, because it's interesting whenever you have a couple involved with this or a couple involved with business that sometimes it does not work, like probably about 70% of the time. But man, that 30% that it does, it's normally just such a beautiful relationship to see happen and to see you guys out there not only doing this and starting up the, you know, Southeast Texas Bigfoot page, but also starting up the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Conference, now the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Roadshow. Let's get into that real quick, because that's kind of how we met. Was I was looking for events here in my backyard in Texas that I could go be a part of. And I ran across you guys because our mutual friend and guest on this show, Daniel Allen Jones, is actively hosting the upcoming conference, and we got to talking about it.
Yeah,
I was like, "Oh yeah, cool. You know those guys? Well, I'm definitely going to reach out to them then." And I'm so glad that we've met and that you guys have come on. So, tell us a little bit about the origins of the conference, how it came to be in historic Mineola, which actively has one of the most haunted locations in Texas.
Yes. That's actually what did it.
are y'all staying at the hotel?
No, we're not at that hotel. We're at another one, but there's some friends of ours that are going to be staying there.
I and my technician are staying there.
Okay, cool.
It was odd getting a hold of them. Their website was not like, you know, hey, come on in.
Yeah.
I contacted them and asked them if they were still renovating or if they had rooms to rent. They're like, oh, we're open. Like, well, okay. Yes. Do you have pricing?
Just recently they opened back up. Mm. Yeah.
And she's a really nice lady, but it is a haunted location. So you're going to have to let us know if you hear anything in the middle of the night.
I'm bringing infrared cameras, all kinds of stuff for both of our rooms. So
very good.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the conference. And once again, what brought y'all to bring it to Mineola?
Okay, well, several years ago, once we finally found out about the Bigfoot and his stuff going on around here, we was on the internet and I seen on Facebook I seen where there's another guy by the name of Craig Woolheater, which was a guest of yours recently, and he has the Texas Bigfoot Conference. Well, we went up there, and I'm telling you right now, we were in love. Everything there is Bigfoot, and we had such a good time. That's what started us camping in Caddo, which is about 20 minutes away, and then we would just go to the conference. And met a lot of nice people. And the thing about Bigfooting is, there's a lot of people who's afraid of being made fun of or teased about it. And when you're in a room with several hundred people that has the same mindset as you, it really is a good feeling. And it's just like we're a big family up there. And we was talking about, we went to a couple other conferences and Falk and we decided to I said, you know, we was talking one night and I said, why don't we put on a conference? And this was in 2017.
Oh wow.
And so 2018 was our first one, and we actually had Cliff and Bobo from Finding Bigfoot there. And we had looked around for some place that could hold maybe 400 or 500 people.
That's all we were expecting, to be honest.
Yeah. And we ended up, we had 1,100 people show up.
Wow.
Yes. And it was just crazy. And all the vendors sold out everything they had. It's just, you know, all the food, all the hats, this, you know, everything. But we had a bunch of guys there. We had a real good time. And everybody had had a good response about it. Mm-hmm. So we decided we're going to do it again. And the following year, we did it with the there is a antique style paddle boat on Lake Conroe.
Yeah,
it's called the Southern Empress.
Yep.
And we did the dinner. We rented that for the whole Friday night.
Oh,
and
wow!
All the people, the 120 people, got to eat dinner on there and go around the lake for about 4 hours. So we had a great time. And then the next day is the conference. And then we had a big lineup and a luau and everything planned for the third year. But the COVID canceled it and got us again last year. And so we decided we're going to switch gears a little bit. I mean, we could still be back there, but I had so many people private messaging me and or us and say, oh, man, when can y'all come over here? Well, I had met George Jones. He does the Tyler Paranormal Conference.
Okay.
We met last year and was talking and stuff. And I found out he is the general manager over the theater in Mineola.
The Select
Theater.
Oh, wow.
And so we was just talking and he said, man, you ought to bring it there to the theater. And me and Michelle was talking and said, hey, that sounds like an idea. We could move it around, you know, and and change venues and stuff. And they just so happened to own the across the street. They own a building over there they call the Annex.
Okay.
That's where they keep all their props and stuff because they do live theater there too.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you're going to be set up along with the other vendors and the speakers.
Too cool.
And it's going to be really big. The mayor of Mineola is going to come in Saturday morning and greet everyone. And they're going to close off the street in front of the theater on both ends so we can have vendors out there selling food and crafts. So we're really excited about it. And this year we decided we've got 4 Bigfoot speakers, a UFO speaker, which is Daniel Jones.
Yep.
And then the paranormal / ghost speaker, which is George Jones. So we're going to just dabble our foot in that, see how that feels, and we may extend on to that. So,
all right.
We just like changing things up. We do have something in the annex. It's called Researchers Row.
Ooh.
And we take actual boots-on-the-ground researchers, friends of ours, and they're going to be in there seated at these tables, willing to talk to the public and talk to them about anything.
Yeah.
So besides being able to see the speakers that the majority of them have been on television on different TV shows, Monster Quest, and everything, besides seeing those and hearing those guys, you can actually talk to boots on the ground investigators that's right here in Texas, in this area.
Yeah, and they usually bring evidence like cast
pictures.
Some of them play a video
on a laptop.
Yes, yeah. Of their expeditions or whatever. And they like talking to the public and they like sharing their experiences. And this is just another way for people who are interested in Bigfoot to learn about Bigfoot.
Wow. Yes.
And that's what I love, because I mean, myself, I'm a comic fan. And back in the day, I'm not going to say it wasn't popular to be a comic fan. Comic fans were always comic fans. We didn't care who knew
yeah.
we were comic fans, but there were comic cons. They were not the comic cons that you see today. They were not sponsored by the city of Houston. Like Comic Palooza is, with like superstars coming and get a VIP ticket and get pictures with the Fonz and Stan Lee. I remember one where I saw Stan Lee and got his autograph. And that was a huge convention that happened at like Huffines Pavilion at University of Houston. They were typically like at a really small little like Ramada Inn. Inside of a very small room with like 50 tables. Even the one when like Spawn came out and Spawn number one was released to the public and Image Comics happened. Like, I think there were maybe 1,000 people there for the 2 days that it happened, you know? Now, if that happened, there would be tens of thousands of people over the 2 days.
Oh, yeah. And it's a several day event. Yes.
Well, that's where we're at nowadays with events with people of common mind. Whenever it comes to things like this, when people in a community hear about it, they make time to make their way out. And it's really cool that you guys have taken the effort to once again, not just. Because I remember whenever I first got a hold of you guys, there were some people on the Facebook group that were like, oh, you know, why are you taking this thing all the way up there? And to put it the way you just put it, the fact that you were now making it accessible to people that maybe couldn't make it all the way out to Conroe every year.
Yeah.
You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I'm not going to spoil anything yet, but. We've already got our set side on next year, and we've already got a venue, but we're going to keep that under our hat for now.
Okay.
And it's going to be really fun.
Now, we've got you for another few minutes here, about another 20, 30 minutes, but let's start getting into where. Now, earlier you said I also believe that Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Wendigo, whatever you want to call it, these things are active, real animals. There are a lot of people, once again, even in the community that I started on Facebook, things like that, that'll look at me and go, Chris, you're a crazy person. What I propose to people all the time, and what I'm about to pop up, is from NASA.gov. This image was taken in 2012. Now, granted, there's been some growth, but it hadn't been a crazy amount.
Yeah.
This is just what the United States looked like at night overhead from space in 2012. Now, note, there is about half of the country that does not have city lights.
Yeah.
Because there's no city. Nobody lives there. It's wilderness still. So when people are like, oh, well, you know, there's so much, like, we've been everywhere. What are you talking about? Not really. not so much. So when you talk about places like the Northeast, where we literally have rainforests, where you talk about places like, the big thicket part of Oklahoma, especially where there are parts where you can't even see 12 feet in front of your face, much less get through it. But there's wildlife in there. There's deer that live in there. There's bears. There's all kinds of stuff. We discovered 1,000 new species last year and there was a pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's foolish to think otherwise.
Well, one thing, because I got people ask me, you know, when I was working, I'm retired now, but when I was working, they'd say, oh, there's the Bigfoot guy, you know, because I got a sticker on the back of my truck.
What did you do for a living?
I was a safety coordinator for a construction company.
Oh, yeah. So no foolish job. It's not like, you know, you were like, not that a mechanic is a foolish job or anything, but I mean,
yeah,
you were somebody that was trusted. Your signature went on things and buildings went up because of you, man.
And I appreciate that. And I had a real good time. And, but it's just, I used to have guys ask me, you know, oh, man, you know, there's the Bigfoot guy. But then after we got in the office or out in the field where it was just me and him.
Yeah.
Then they say, hey, man, did you really believe in that? I said, yeah. Well, man, let me tell you something. I heard something. But they're afraid of getting ridiculed.
Yeah.
By coworkers and friends and family.
Yep.
And one thing I tell people, if you've ever heard a wood knock, I mean, if you're outside and you hear something out in the woods and it's pop, it sounds like a bat hitting a tree. Well, there's only two things on the face of the earth that's got an opposable thumb. That's the apes, and that's us.
Yep.
So there's not a coyote, not a wild pig, not a bear. None of that's got an opposable thumb that can grab a branch and strike a tree with it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's any gorillas or monkeys out there. And I don't think there's any humans out there in the middle of Lord knows how many hundreds of acres.
Yeah.
At middle of the night. So you tell me what it is. And it's just I have never set out to argue with anybody about it. Everybody can believe whatever they want.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, granted, there is the contingent out there that, as we said at the beginning of our conversation, that believes in the paranormal side of Bigfoot, whether that be portals or interdimensional travel, paranormal or supernatural powers involved. That I don't know. Beats me. Is it possibly a biological animal that has been seen for generations by people? And there are populations, small populations across the globe. Yes, that is a firm belief by me. I think to not explore it as science is foolhardy. I think it's a bit much. And I do not blame. And I've been trying to get the folks on for a little while. I know that there is another group out of Southeast Texas, actually, that actively is hunting Bigfoot. And they're like, hey, if we have to throw a body on a table, we will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's what it takes. If that is the extreme that it takes for us to protect this animal and to prove that it is real, we will do it.
Yeah.
And I do not blame that mentality or thought process at all. As a hunter, like, I'm Cajun, man. My people, like, I have people in my family that grew up trapping.
Yeah.
You know, and to those people, hunting is food. It's not like, yeah, you have fun while you're out on a hunt, but you ain't out hunting something just for the sake of killing it.
Yeah.
You know,
you're providing for your family.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And in much the same way, these people are doing the same thing. If it takes us providing you a corpse to prove it's real so that you will protect it and protect its environment and protect its food source, then that is what we will do. Because, I mean, it kind of seems like that's what science is saying. Every turn that I see, every documentary that I see, where they bring a scientist or a veterinarian and they're like, well, we don't really have any, you know, like corpses or bodies. And it's like, well, you know, you don't find a lot of wild bear bodies out in the woods.
Exactly.
You don't find a lot of intact skeletons, period, out in the woods. Well,
there was a program one time that covered something like that. And they found a roadkill deer. and they laid it out in the woods, and they tied it down with this heavy wire to keep it from being drug off. And yeah. within a week, it was completely gone.
Yep.
They had some cameras set up with the
motion, real time.
The real, you know, it's speeded up, and you can see all the time lapse, the decomposition, and then the different animals coming and scattering the bones. And pretty soon, there's some wire laying there, because everything in that animal is a food or nutrition to another animal or insect. And, you know, whenever people say, well, why haven't they found no skeletons? I don't know, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to argue about it. I just know what I believe.
Well, yeah, yeah. And I mean, hey, even on the body farm, like there's a place called the Body Farm where literally they take.
In Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, where they take bodies and do forensic work, things like that. And they have to protect the bodies until they go to inspect them with like wire cages.
Yeah.
That they put over the top. Otherwise, like, yeah, raccoons will come and take eyeballs overnight. You know, things like that. And how are you going to study like how that eyeball decayed over a week if some raccoon comes and takes it?
Exactly.
Like, even there was even the case not too long ago of and it was photographed, I remember, it was a wildlife officer who found a deer that was eating a human body.
Yeah.
So
I remember something about that. Like, it was
will scavenge meat off of bones and take an arm or something and take it off and go eat it. That was something that was never really considered until really recently, like the last couple years. It was mind blowing that, like, wow, okay, so this is a behavior that we did not know about.
Yeah. Well, I've got a real good feeling that the whole Bigfoot phenomena is going to continue to grow. And all I can say is I'm 65 now. So I hope and pray I see it before I go, that I want to be able to see it being proven as a species and it's accepted
and protected.
Yeah.
Because there is actually several researchers who has passed on in the past, you know, couple of years, and they were in their 70s and 80s.
Yep.
And they never got to see that.
Yeah.
And but I'm sure wherever they are now, they know what the truth is.
Well, and you know, a lot of those folks, not Bob Gimlin, but his friend,